WCNC Charlotte. This is Flashpoint, where power and politics collide and the tough questions get asked and answered.
Thanks for joining us here on Flashpoint. I'm Ben Thompson. We have got a big show today with two high-profile Democrats representing Charlotte at the local and federal level. Congressman Jeff Jackson sitting in on his first State of the Union address this past week. Ahead, his reaction to some of the president's big plans as he looks to running in 2024. And then a little bit later, we're going to hear from Mayor Pro Tem Braxton Winston about some of Charlotte's big plans to expand transit options here in the Queen City. But first, joining us now, Congressman Jeff Jackson. He represents the new 14th District. It covers parts of Mecklenburg and Gaston counties. Congressman, thanks for coming on and joining us. We appreciate it.
Good to see you.
All right, so this week you attended the State of the Union. We saw the president get heckled by some Republicans. Some people say the president probably got the best of them in many circumstances. You tweeted about it afterwards and how sort of weird it was to watch unfold the performative aspect of it. Explain that to us.
Well, I lost a bet right before the State of the Union started. A bunch of the new members were all standing together, and someone said, "Hey, Jeff, I bet you that the president is going to get heckled." And I said, "Nah, I don't think that's going to happen. The whole House of Representatives is here. The whole Senate is here. The Supreme Court is here. Joint Chiefs, Bono was there. You know, you don't do that in front of Bono." So I said, "Nah, I think it'll be okay." And I was completely wrong. There was a lot of heckling. It only came from a small handful of people. I want to be clear. It's not like the entire majority party was doing it. It was really a small handful of people. But it was, especially if you were sitting on the floor, it was very easy to hear and very easy to see who was doing it. And it was just an example of sort of the outrage Olympics that a big piece of our politics has become, where you got people who want to win gold in the outrage Olympics. And a good way to do that is to heckle the president while he's giving the State of the Union.
Because you argued that you felt like he was making some bipartisan proposals that should be able to find some common ground among folks there on Capitol Hill.
Well, I don't think there's any question that he was doing that. He was also saying some partisan things. The entire speech was not bipartisan. He was drawing some contrast between two different visions and two different agendas. So I understand that people will disagree with some things that he's saying, but most of his speech, as he sort of established and laid out, was a unity agenda. It was ideas for some things we can do, despite the fact that we have a divided Congress. Big tech, privacy, stuff for young families. There was a lot of stuff in there that would enjoy broad support across the country.
Given the reaction you saw among some Republican members there, how confident are you that you're going to be able to have a productive session of Congress over the next 2 years and get some meaningful things done?
I'm reasonably confident that we can exceed expectations just because of how low expectations are right now. But look, if you're Speaker McCarthy, you have a major incentive to get some things done because he's got a majority. He wants to grow that majority. And the way he does that isn't by tanking the economy over a debt ceiling fight, right? It's by going back to the American people and saying, "Here are the things we were able to accomplish." So I feel like I'm entering a Congress that could go one of two ways. We could drive this thing straight into the ditch, or we could find some things to work together on. There is a long list of things that has, you know, broad support across the country. There's no shortage of issues on which we have common ground. A big piece of this is going to be, yeah, how much freedom does McCarthy have to work with Democrats on anything? Right now, it feels pretty small, but it may grow over time.
Well, let's talk Chinese spy balloon. It sort of dominated headlines over the last week. You're on Armed Services Committee now. The U.S. military is shooting down the plane. Republicans argue that it should have happened days earlier. Why do you think they're wrong?
Well, not all Republicans are arguing that. You've got some Republicans out there saying that the military, the timeline that they used to shoot down the balloon was the right timeline. I started sort of in the camp of we need to take this down immediately and not really understanding why we didn't. And then, as you said, I'm on the Armed Services Committee. I have the ability to speak to some members of military leadership. And I would just say that they educated me about the intelligence advantages to handling it the way that they handled it, I guess is what I would say. So I started in a place of skepticism about the timeline for their decision making and ended in a place of confidence that they handled this in the best possible way.
Do you feel like in the future something like this happens again, that they need to basically follow the same protocol they did this time?
Not necessarily, because it's a little different now that China's on notice that we are going to shoot this down. I also cannot imagine. And part of what's so disturbing about this isn't just that it happened. It's that some military leadership in China thought that this was a good idea, when this was just an incredibly dumb idea on their part. They had to know we were going to detect this thing, and that we'd have every political incentive in the world and military incentive to shoot it out of the sky. If they do it again, that is a terrible sign about their willingness to, their susceptibility, I guess I would say, for engaging in miscalculation. It would be just an unbelievable miscalculation for them to try this stunt again.
Being that you've spoken to members of the military, do you have a better sense for what these balloons are capable of? I mean, we heard balloon and we're all like, okay, a balloon. But do you have a better sense of just high tech these things are or not?
I do have a better sense of that at this point, and I think that the entire public will have a better sense of that sooner rather than later.
We mentioned that you were representing the 14th district, created by the population growth here in North Carolina, but it's created by the state Supreme Court in an order that they did. What happens to your seat going down the road in the next session?
I imagine it gets redrawn. The state Supreme Court just shifted parties, so now it's the majority of the state Supreme Court is the same as the majority party in the state legislature. The state legislature gets to redraw the map, and so now they're probably thinking to themselves they have less of a judicial problem and more of a blank check to sort of draw the map to their heart's content, and I imagine they'll try some version of that. There may be a federal judicial backstop, but we have yet to see.
You mentioned in your newsletter about meeting an infamous member of Congress. Those are my word, infamous. You don't give a name, but you walk away saying, like, you were really impressed by this person, even though the person's reputation is completely goes against what you experienced yourself.
Yeah, look, I can't condone someone who has invented a persona. That's not an ethical way to conduct yourself as an elected official. This person clearly did that, and it was obvious from speaking with them. And they were even... I mean, they even said things to that effect in the conversation. It opened my eyes to the extent to which there are those deliberate constructions of personas in order for some type of political consumption or some type of media consumption. And I sort of realized I need to set my assumptions aside about everybody, because while they may have personas, they also are individual people. And sometimes you can work with an individual person when you look at the persona and think, I could never work with that. There are still individual people beneath that persona with which you will have some common ground on some policy issues.
I'm assuming you're not going to name the person.
It wasn't Santos. That's all, okay, I'll tell you.
Although you did see him as well, I saw. Let me put you on the spot. Do you think President Biden should run again?
Yes, he won the last time. He's our best bet of winning the next time.
And final question, your biggest surprise 1 month being into Congress?
How many good people are there who I didn't even know existed? When I started running, I wrote down a list of names of everyone who I just knew existed in the House. It was fewer than 30 people. So I didn't know 90% of the people there. I've met a ton of people there on both sides of the aisle who are real experts in what they do and what they care about. And that I wish more Americans could see that. There are people you don't even know exist up there who are doing good work.
Made a name for himself as up in Raleigh as a state lawmaker there, now doing the same or something similar at least up in our nation's capital. Congressman Jeff Jackson. Congressman, thank you for coming on. We appreciate it.
Good to see you.
All right, take care. More Flashpoint after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Charlotte city leaders trying to move forward with big plans for transit here in Charlotte. Council now trying to figure out the best way to fund a $13.5 billion transit plan. And now they need help from state lawmakers in Raleigh to get a key referendum on the ballot. Joining us now, Charlotte Mayor Pro Tem, the new Pro Tem we should add since his last visit to Flashpoint, Braxton Winston. Braxton, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Ben. Good to see you.
Good to see you as always. All right, so this week, members of City Council hearing about plans to revitalize the transportation center uptown. I know you guys have decided to move it underground. Big plans to add dozens of restaurants, shops there in the heart of uptown. The consultants I think that you guys heard from had the idea of branding these sort of developments, these districts, and could bring in $137 million. I just want to get you on the record. Do you think that's feasible? What do you think of this plan?
I absolutely think it's feasible. I think it's a good plan, or it's a good start of a plan, and I think it's a good approach. You know, as we're entering new phases of public-private partnership, we of course are trying to figure out how to best utilize the resources that those public-private partnerships provide. When we look at our transit investments, and especially in our uptown area, we're trying to always trying to figure out how to give the best utility for people to use. So when we look at the future of the CTC, the Spectrum Center, the epicenter that is close by that is going to be reimagined, and the massive investments that have been made on the Gold Line, how do you squeeze the most juice out of that? And I think this entertainment district, this cultural district, this transit district is a wonderful approach.
Last week, Charlotte City Council Transportation Chair Ed Driggs was on the show, and he said he doesn't think the city will be able to get that 1 cent sales tax referendum on the ballot this November. He just doesn't think that there's enough agreement among stakeholders, you guys, folks up in Raleigh. Do you think that's a fair assessment? Because I know there were hopes that it could happen this year.
Well, again, another thing about the transit district, right, is it brings an innovative approach to revenue building, right? Again, this is something that we have to figure out. We know we have limited options to generate revenue, a new revenue, to invest in transit, but we have to keep being innovative. You know, I, when it comes to the 1 cent sales tax, you know, like I've said in the past, we have to look folks in the eye and tell them what we want and why we need the things that we want, and how that works, not just on a city level, but on a regional level and on a state level. You can't imagine that you know, these new concepts are going to just happen at a snap of a finger. These are conversations that are going to have to be worked on and massaged out over time. But just because people are might not be there yet, that is even more reason why we should start that conversation to generate that revenue, to inform and engage about why this is actually necessary. I have high confidence that we will get there, because at the end of the day, the Charlotte region is the economic lungs of this state, and there is an interest in this state to keep people and goods moving in and through Charlotte. And at the end of the day, I don't think people will sabotage that once they understand that.
As Mayor Pro Tem and a leader there on City Council, where do things stand with this plan, this $13.5 billion plan? Because it doesn't seem like there's been, I'm sure there's behind the scenes progress being made, but at least to all of our eyes, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of progress being made. We had Tim Moore on the show back a month or so ago. He's recently expressed sort of skepticism about the plan, as you know. So where do things stand as far as getting the stakeholders in this thing engaged and actually making some progress?
Well, we have work to do. Like you said, there are a ton of there's a ton of work to do, whether it be behind the scenes or in public forums. I was just meeting with the mayor and commissioner up on Cornelius this week, and we were talking about the needs and level setting of how our infrastructures don't right now and need to work together in the future. So, you know, at the end of the day, nobody can deny that we need better sidewalks. We need more transportation options in more places, whether that be bus, whether that be rail, whether that be walking, whether that be biking. The current status is not okay, but I will say I think it starts with our city council, and we have some work to do to provide a clear path forward and a clear consensus about what our priorities are. So that's really what I'm focused on right now, is how do we get a clear message through with city council? So even though we might have different approaches, and ultimately we might have different priorities as we look at this entire city, that we're able to bring a clear message to the community, to our partners, in those conversations, whether they be behind the scenes or in public forums.
Would you be okay with the idea that's been floated about front-loading the plan by focusing on expanding roads first?
Absolutely. You know, I'm for getting dirt moving because, again, you know, I'm down here in Steel Creek right now. And and the issues that we have are that we don't have the local road networks to facilitate good movement in rush hours or throughout the day. We have one of the worst road networks of all major cities, whether that be in America or all across the world. We have to fix that. We have solutions we have solutions for problems that are on the ground right now. We know that we have hundreds of miles of sidewalks that need to be created or improved. And I don't want to wait, you know, for a decade to get dirt moving when we have problems that have solutions that can be started now.
What would your message be to Republican lawmakers in Raleigh?
My message is that there is common ground here, that this is not a political debate. This is honestly not even an urban-rural divide debate. What we need to do is get back to the history of North Carolina and the history of our urban areas like Charlotte, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and Raleigh that created an economic engine for those rural places in the South to bring our goods that can be processed and sold on the market throughout the rest of this country and the rest of the world. We've done these things before. That's why Charlotte exists. It's been a logistical place to move goods in and through. And if we want to take make most of our port in Wilmington in the 74 corridor, if we want to make the best use of our 85 corridor, 95 and 77, we're going to have to make those infrastructure investments to, again, keep these economic lungs of the state clear so that investment and those resources can be spread throughout the state.
Final question, more about you than it is an issue. At this point, I think our viewers, most people know your story. You came to be known back in 2016 as a protester during racial unrest here.
Concerned
citizen. No, that's fair. That's fair, too. Ran for council, did really well, then became mayor pro tem last year. What future plans do you have, if any?
Well, my future plans is to get this investment made in our transportation and transit system so that we can, again, have the generational shifts that are needed to provide an affordable and equitable community, whether that's in the city, this region, or the entire state. We have a lot of work to do. I'm proud of the work that we did up and through the election last year. And I'm looking forward to taking a page out of that book to keep working and moving forward.
Would you have any interest in being mayor one day?
I'm interested in being a city council member and at large and working through this mayor pro tem responsibility that I have. Anything other than that, like I said, is going to be made in concert with what is best for my family.
Understandable. All right, Braxton Winston, thanks as always. We appreciate it.
All right, Ben, have a great day.
All right, you too. More Flashpoint after this. Now to a Where's the Money investigation on some city leaders. The mayor of Charlotte and a city council member paid their delinquent tax bills this week after WCNC Charlotte discovered they failed to pay their property taxes from last year. And as our Nate Morbiru tells us, a third council member said he will soon do the same.
Fittingly, we discovered these late payments on the same day the city council held its first budget workshop. All three told us their failure to pay was not intentional.
You have to begin to look and say what's most important. Because
not long before Mayor Vi Lyles took the microphone during Thursday's budget workshop, she paid a roughly $950 delinquent tax bill for a rental property she owns. Through a spokesperson, the mayor thanked WCNC Charlotte for bringing this to her attention and added she has a property manager who should have handled this. Also around that time, council member Tariq Bakari paid a $7,680 delinquent tax bill for his home, which he said he refinanced last year. After WCNC Charlotte reached out, Bakari said he confirmed with his lender the automatic escrow wasn't properly set up, during the refinancing process, telling us that's being set up now. He added, thanks for the heads up. The county says this refi situation happens all the time. Councilmember James Mitchell also blamed an oversight for a delinquent tax bill for one of his cars. He owes $150, according to tax records, and told us, I'll make sure I take care of it next week. And here's how it works. If you make your payments before January 5th, you don't have to pay interest. In each of these cases, they all had to pay extra money. Nate Morabito, WCNC Charlotte.
More Flashpoint coming up after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Folks, come interact with us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. If there's something you want us to cover, talk about here on Flashpoint, let us know. And as always, remember to listen and subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you get yours. And we'll see you back here next weekend.